What's up, everybody? Welcome back to a brand new episode of Life After High School, the number one resource podcast in the entire world. I wouldn't say this to you guys if it was not purely factual. Brought to you by me, Glenn YG. I am your host and the man behind the microphone. Each week, we look to drop a new episode, so make sure you guys subscribe on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast from. Don't forget to also follow the podcast on social media at Life After High School 1. We've got a killer episode for you guys this week, so without further ado, let's dive right into it. Cue that intro, baby.
It's the Life After High School podcast.
Kevin, first and foremost, I'm really happy we were able to get started and set up a recording date and finally go through with it. So I'm very excited. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. So yeah, man, thanks for doing the show. I appreciate your time today.
Totally, dude. Like I mentioned to you on the Instagram chats, I'm super excited about it.
Right on. Awesome. So kind of to help people out for your timeline, a bit about who you are and stuff like that. Can you kind of tell us and me kind of where you went from leaving post-secondary, that kind of time frame of your life to where we are now? And then we can go back through it full circle and debrief it. So if you don't mind.
Yeah, totally. Here's my kind of Cole's Notes version of this. Today I'm like on stage as a keynote speaker, recognized as a Paralympian in sledge hockey. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know the sport, you play hockey playing sitting down and you pull yourself around the ice using your arms. If you saw me on the street, I'm walking and I look pretty normal. Like you wouldn't really be able to tell other than it looks like some days I'm fighting the wind.
Yeah.
I just kind of have like lean back a little bit when I'm walking. And, the reason why I got into sledge hockey is I broke my back on my dirt bike when I was 23 years old and was paralyzed. I was actually never supposed to walk again. So made a really good recovery. We're just skimming the top right here, but I just like a little bit of luck, a lot of hard work. And so I get on my feet, I'm walking around every day. I got both my legs and I blend in pretty well as if I'm an able-bodied person, but I got an invisible disability.
Right. Nice.
And then what put me on stage as a keynote speaker is the ironic fact that my dad was also paralyzed 4 years before I was in a hunting accident.
Oh, wow.
So we were, when I was 19 years old, deer hunting, and the branch my dad was standing on up in the tree, it broke and he fell about two stories to the ground, broke his back and became a complete paraplegic about 8 months from retirement. And long story short,
close.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And then we can definitely dive into, yeah, you know, he waited to live his life and I got many lessons from that. but he struggled with his injury and it ended up leading to my mom leaving dad, not because of his disability, but because of his attitude towards his disability.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, shortly thereafter, he took his own life. So it was a pretty gnarly 5 years from the age of 19 until 24. It was like a shit show. And, but as a result of all of that, it's what led me to the stage to share my story. It's what led me to the Paralympics to have then gone on to experience an amazing dream that so many people aspire for, to both compete in the Olympics and get paid to be an athlete.
Yeah.
And represent the country too. And so, yeah, that's the Cole's Notes about today. Like, I continue to deliver speeches and, also coach, people with their mindset to navigate change through career and life transitions. And those two things are what I'm most passionate about today.
Amazing. So I kind of want to rewind back the clock to, and we can go before this, we can go after this, but my biggest thing that I was curious about, every time I hear about somebody that went through kind of like a life-changing accident or something along those lines, I really want to know about the identity shift that it played and the role that played and what that was like for that person. So Kevin, I'm curious, what was that process like for you, like after your accident going through? Because it sounds like, and I'd like to, if that's all right, do kind of like a comparative with what happened with your father, but from your perspective, right? Because it sounds like it was both like very traumatic events, similar but different, right, in their own right, and then completely different way of dealing with situations. And I want to know what was your, from your perspective, how was that? Like, how was that identity shift for you? Like, what was the biggest challenge you faced and kind of how'd you get over it with that?
Yeah. So would you mind if I actually jumped back to my elementary school for a second?
Please, please. Yeah.
Talking about identity, especially for the nature of your podcast here. It's life after high school. But from an identity perspective, the first big shift in my identity came from my transition from elementary school into high school.
Really?
And I'll explain why why. In elementary school, I wasn't very popular. My mom was a lunch hall monitor. So if any kid got in trouble on school grounds, it was because of her.
Yeah.
And my mom stole Avon and I got picked on for those things. And I never felt like I wasn't like significantly bullied, but I definitely got picked on enough that I felt bullied.
Right.
And the reason why I share all this is because I remember the last day of my grade eight, I walked off the school playground. And as I got to the end of the sidewalk, before I started walking home, I turned back around and looked at the school and the school playground. And I don't remember if I said it out loud or just in my head, but I remember saying to myself, I'm never going to be a loser again.
Hell yeah. Wow.
That was a big one because I just had such a miserable elementary school life that when I got into high school that summer, I remember thinking that summer, I am going to like reinvent myself. Like just
starting fresh
and I'm not going to allow a fresh start to turn into that same kind of story. So that was like one part. Then when dad got hurt, admittedly, I did feel like a victim in that scenario. Like I was super pissed off. I'm like, why does my childhood teenage years got to be the ones that are all screwed up now? Why do I got to be the kid with the father that's got to deal with this? I never knew how much of a normal family I had until it fell apart.
Right.
So that was really awful and shitty. And then, so I lived with that for 4 years. Like I've now experienced life with a disability in the family from both sides, like from a caregiver kind of perspective and then also lived experience. And when I got injured, from an identity perspective, like what I knew is that I didn't want to be like my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because of his negative attitude towards his accident and injury and how it drove our family apart and his friends away, and he developed a gambling addiction. That plus the identity or the culture in extreme sports that when you fall down, you pick yourself back up.
Yeah.
That was literally automatically like my identity. Like the minute that I was like on the ground paralyzed,
it was no option for you to play victim for lack of a better term, right? There was no, oh, we need to, it's always you fall down, get back up. Yeah.
Yeah. And I share a story in my keynotes. Like when I was on the ground paralyzed before I'd even been loaded onto the stretcher, I had my friend Chris there filming that day and he came over, shook my hand, told me he loved me. And as I grabbed Chris's hand back and I said, I love you too, man.
Yeah.
The next words out of my mouth were, you better be filming this.
Oh, he's fired, man. He's fired if he didn't hit that little red button. Well,
he was looking after me, and all I was thinking about is captured on film, because in 100%. My mind, I wanted that. Like, this is the beginning of the comeback.
Yeah, that's the blow-up video right there. Wow. Sick. Oh, man.
So I know that's not normal for a lot of people to be thinking that way, but the lessons that I would want to share with anyone listening here or watching, it's that, you know, ask yourself a question, like, what do you say to yourself when you get knocked down? Like, do you say to yourself, it's over, you know, I'm never going to come back from this, like, oh my God, what now? Or do you think to yourself, like, shit, I got to pick myself back up. Like, there's no time to waste. Like, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how else to explain it other than that was what was in my mind. And today, as I speak in my keynote about the hero mindset, it's because the heroes that I looked up to, other action sports athletes, that was their mentality. That was their attitude.
Right.
And so when I seen other athletes get knocked down and they keep the camera rolling, like, you always want to document your crash, because as an athlete, you're throughout the course of the year making video parts.
Yeah.
And the best video parts are amazing tricks when they are landed, but it's like, yeah, if someone falls down, it's like you want to see the attempts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you
see how many failures it took for them to land that one trick first time.
100%.
And like, that's the joy, that's the joy in the journey of those sports.
Mm-hmm.
And so that same mentality is the approach that I have now to life that I try to teach other people. It's like, when you're falling down, it just means that you're trying,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
Yeah.
And if you get knocked down, even if it's bad, doesn't mean it's over. It just might mean that's the beginning of your comeback. Think about the video part that you're creating in your life.
Interesting. How do you prevent the cycle of if somebody goes in, or, and maybe perhaps you've experienced this, maybe not directly, but indirectly secondhand, when people do something and they're succeeding and they do really well, and then they have that almost like post achievement depression, and there's like a lull, like there's a highs high, but there's low lows, and it's simply, it's very easy. And I'm sure we've both seen this in the past. I know I have, where it's easy to sweep it under the rug and go, it's just mental health. The brain's complex to understand. And it's dismissing the idea that, and whether this is applicable for everybody or not, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, is if they're able to actually prevent themselves from going back into that pit, right? Because it seems like the high highs and the low lows, but it's the brain's complex. So I'll always be depressed, even though this accident and my trauma is just lingering, but it happened 10 years ago. And it's a weird understanding. In the last few weeks, I've been discussing this kind of in prep for this, and then other things, is understanding that line between where is it, are we a victim, are we relatable, and then how we can kind of go through that process. So I'm curious what your 5 cents is on that.
Yeah, there's a number of different things we could unpack in mm-hmm. what you kind of asked and shared there. The first thing, real simple. So, and again, for the listeners, like after I joined sledge hockey, played on Team Canada 5 years, went to the Paralympics. And I know what Glenn you're mentioning or referring to is I myself went through post-Olympic depression.
Mm.
And so that was like a third identity shift. Like I had an identity shift in elementary school. I had an identity shift in me being paralyzed. Like when I had to give up motocross and then become a disabled person, like person with a disability.
Mm.
I mean, that's the distinction right there, which I'm going to get to.
Yep.
And then I had another identity shift in life after sport. And in each of those three circumstances, well, not the elementary school necessarily, but here's the lesson. When you struggle with an identity shift, especially in something like letting go of an old career or a sport,
yeah,
recognize that that sport, let's just use sport as an example, for me, which was my career, it's something that you do. It's not who you are.
Right.
But when we attach what we do as who we are, now our sport becomes our identity. Our relationship, our girlfriend, our boyfriend becomes our identity. My career, I am a sales associate. I am a flight attendant, whatever it is. That's who I am. No, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so number one, like just recognizing the distinction between those is one of the first steps. The second step to consider is when you have a change or experience a change happening, ask yourself the question, what do I need to let go of?
Yeah.
So for example, like I was just chatting with a recently retired athlete yesterday, and we were having almost identical conversation to this about transition in life after sport. And so I asked him that question, like, what do you need to let go of? And he's like, I don't really know. And I'm like, well, I prompt with some examples. I was like, you got to let go of living a high performance life. Do you got to let go of your identity with the team? Do you got to let go of the fun and joy of traveling or being paid to be an athlete? Or do you got to let go of your relationships with your teammates? He's like, that's it. He's like, I'm having a hard time letting go of the relationships. I was like, cool. Okay. Yeah. So let's dive into that.
Perfect.
But it's like, that can be different for everybody. So, so just to start by recognizing what is it that you're struggling to let go of, then you can start to dive into that. It's like, okay, well, if relationships are the challenge or what you loved, it's like, how can you maintain those with healthy boundaries or whatever it is? Cause we got, there's nuances about, well, is seeing my friends do well triggering me to be depressed?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I need to create some space, or does it help me feel closer and stay connected? I mean, that's where we get into the details. That's the kind of stuff that I love helping people in coaching.
Yeah.
It's like to get into the specific nuances, because whether it's like I said, the travel, being paid to be not, like, if you want to live a high performance life and that's the thing that you miss, which I definitely did. It's like, you can live a high performance life as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. You can live a high performance life as a dad. Like, yeah, you can still set standards to live a high performance life, but you got to figure out, like, what is it first that you're holding on to?
Interesting. That's a good, I really like that way, Kevin, that you're breaking it down. You're almost finding what the person's attachment is in that, like, overall thing that they're attached to in their identity, and then kind of debunking it from there. It's like, okay, well, this professional athlete, that's great, but there's so many different strings that go to that head, right? So I like that way that you're able to break that down. I kind of want to go back to something you mentioned a few minutes ago about post-Olympic depression and stuff like that. You had the one Olympic run in Sochi, right?
Yep.
Correct. Okay. Can you kind of take me through that little that timeline of, I'm going to pursue sledge hockey, to leave it, like making the decision where it's, this is just one time, this is a one-time thing. How do we kind of transition out? And then we can kind of go from there. I'm just curious for context.
Yeah. I've shared my story publicly in the sense that I actually was cut from the team. I was cut from the team in 2015. So for people that don't know, Olympic cycles are 4-year cycles, like the Winter Olympics and Summer Olympics are every 4 years, and they alternate every 2 years as a summer, winter Olympics. So I played from 2010 to 2014. Season ends, like the Olympics are over, got the medal and everything.
Yeah.
And I had already known in my head that I didn't want to play anymore. I wasn't happy for different reasons, and also wanted to pursue entrepreneurship and just like my speaking career and other things. But when I went through post-Olympic depression that summer, I got myself into a very bad spot mentally and financially. And there was an opportunity to play for another year, and the team was being the whole staff was like wiped clean and started over. I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll play another year if I can make the team, and like, let's see if it's better and if I enjoy it, and then maybe I do go for another 4-year cycle. But that whole next year, I was super miserable. And admittedly, like I became a victim myself again. I was in a shitty mood and shitty attitude, and that showed up in my performance and other ways. And then it led to me being cut from the team. So I don't disagree with the coach's decision at all. And a lesson I share from that experience with other people is that you're better to make the decision for yourself before someone makes it for you.
It's better to remove yourself from it than to have somebody fire you and it just be.
Well, I wasn't too concerned about the perception. I mean, right. For some people that would be a concern for them.
Oh yeah, a lot of people.
For me, it's number one, in hindsight, I recognize how selfish that was.
Sure.
Because I'm not serving the team well by being there with such a shitty attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also taking a spot away from somebody that does want to be on the team, like really fucking badly.
Yeah.
So that's part two. And then the third thing is that in hindsight, I wasted a year of my life.
Mm.
I could have been doing the thing that I really wanted to do. Now, again, given my mental health and headspace at that time and financial position, I really did need that next year of playing to get myself back on my feet again. So I know that I'm not the only person that plays sport selfishly, whether like there's a lot of people that are talented. They don't give a crap that they can play ball or shoot a puck or swing a bat, but they still play because it's given them a pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that there's something wrong with that, but in hindsight, those were some of the strong lessons that I learned about that experience.
Mm. Interesting. So kind of shifting gears as everything kind of went from the pitfall of that to the beginning of the entrepreneurship journey. Were you always, did you always, you always seem to have, just from what I've researched and what I've seen over like the months, years of following you, is you always had almost like a drive to be an entrepreneur, run your own thing, kind of manage, like grow to the, like your limit, not what somebody else says in terms of like a salary or a cap, right? For a wage. So do you remember the reason, maybe not the first example you had in your life, but
I feel like I already know the answer. You haven't even finished the question yet.
Perfect. Amazing. So the first time.
What keeps me going with that resilience and grit?
That, but more so the first example you can think of where you knew when growing up that you wanted to pursue something for yourself, not just like as an employee. You remember?
I think I wrote about it in my book. I was a bricklayer building houses on the job site as a teenager, and the guys around me, they're just, it's like every day it was just getting exhausting. It's like story after story. When I was your age, you could have been an athlete. When I was your age, you could have traveled the world. When I was your age, you could have done this. When I was your age, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, what the fuck happened, dude?
Yeah.
Like, wow. What happened? Why didn't you? Oh, I got a girlfriend. Oh, I was partying. Oh, some dumb excuse. And I was, I was just like, same as I didn't want to be like my dad. I'm like, I've in my life experience, I'm like, you can either be motivated by what you don't want or what you do want. And I have found so much, not always, but often I found more motivation by what I don't want than what I do want, at least when I was younger.
Interesting.
So I was so driven that I'm like, I don't want to be like my dad. I don't want to be like these guys on the job site. I don't want to waste my life. Because my dad, being 8 months from retirement, he waited to live his life. Part of his anger at living with his injury is that I got robbed out of retirement. So here I am.
His freedom.
At 19. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what? I'm not working 30 years to wait to live my life. I'm living my life right now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be 45 years old on the job site saying I could have. I wish I would have. And so the memory, like the, not just the memory, the thing that happened was on January 2nd of 2006. I remember it was the day after New Year's. I was on the job site doing a job in the winter, freezing your ass off. It sucks. And got back to the shop where my boss lived, and we unpacked the trailer and everything. Everybody goes home, and I was intentionally the last one to leave. And I walked up to my boss's door after he'd already gone inside and knocked on the door and told him I quit. And he didn't care because of other reasons. He was not an employer that I would ever speak highly of. I won't get into that.
Fair.
But I made the decision on that day that I am going to become my own boss. I am going to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to take a swing at starting my freestyle motocross company and put on jump shows, because I'm not going to wait for somebody to hire me, because nobody would at that time, the year prior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the entrepreneurial spirit like was born, like it was official. What I was going to say, that like what keeps me going to this day, the mantra, the belief that I say to myself is that I know what I signed up for.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Like you made that deal. You hit the check mark on the terms of service, the terms of agreement with yourself to go through the hell that it'll be. But also the benefits are, it's really just up to you. And what's cool, I found about what you're saying with your father and then with your situations. And I was talking when my friend and I were, I think it was 2018. We did about my friend of mine from work, and I did like a 6-week road trip throughout like Central, Western, and Eastern Europe. And so the quote that came up a lot for us was, most men die at 25 but aren't buried until 75, right? And so just kind of going off of that and understanding what all that's about and how everything takes flight in that direction, there's a lot of things I've talked to, a lot of people I've talked to lately about things of, oh, well, you got to do this, and then by that point you retire. And I have a couple closer friends of mine who are having that purpose issue now that they're done, now that they're retired, honestly. Yeah. Now that they're retired, Kevin, they're like, what do I do with my life? Because they can't do certain things because their health is limited, right? Yeah. So it's a weird it's a weird conflict that they're facing, right? And I kind of want to jump back and understand, what was your relationship like with your father, if you don't mind sharing, before the accident and then after? Because it sounds like there was, like, you were motivated by him, and then you were motivated by him still, like, still as an influence in your life, but in a different way, like more of a negative way, it seems.
Yeah, before my dad's accident, like, my dad was, in my eyes, I guess, a normal dad. Like, he was a great man, supportive father, put food on the table, roof over your head, that kind of deal. We were always told that as a kid. I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
Which is true, which is totally true. I mean, he had a steady paying job, worked for the town, pay the bills, do that kind of thing, save for retirement. Mm-hmm. And, but like before my accident, like we weren't, like we did some things together. Like he would drive me to hockey a little bit.
Nice.
He despised me dirt biking. I was saying to somebody, remember like a few months ago, that I realized when I thought back in my life, it's like, I don't have one memory period whatsoever of my dad in the garage working on my dirt bike with me. We went out hunting and he would do some things like that, but my dad didn't give a shit about my biking. So anyways, my relationship with him was like neutral. I would say, right, it wasn't like great. It wasn't bad.
Nice.
It was just neutral. But then after he got hurt, we just started butting heads. And then when I got hurt that one year that him and I were both in wheelchairs, then it was like two bulls in a ring, just smashing heads every single day together.
Jeez. So going off of that, I'm curious, sorry, for timeline, when did he, I'm trying to piece together timeline. When did you say he passed? Like what year would that have been?
Dad 07? Was injured in 02. I was injured in 06. Yep. Dad passed in 07.
Okay. So that's been a while ago. Seems like it's 13 years now. Yeah.
Well, I mean, since dad got hurt, 22 years in like 2006. So like 18 years since my injury.
Okay, sweet. Yeah. So I'm trying to piece that together in my head. So with that, what lessons as a man did he teach you, whether it be directly or indirectly, that you would have learned from him, or like that you learned from him? I mean,
yeah, great. I love that you asked that question. I don't want to ever paint a negative picture about my dad. Like I said, that he was a bad man.
Yeah.
Just he struggled with those sort of things. And those are what I remember, unfortunately, but I'll give you an example. So something that I'm super grateful and proud of my dad instilling in me is hard work. Now, I think as we've grown in technology, like hard work is defined a bit differently now than just like, you know, slinging hard labor forever. But my dad made me get a job. Like I can think of my first job. I think I might've started when I was 9 years old. I got a paper route, and then I worked in a greenhouse, and then I worked at a gas station. And I'm really grateful that my dad pressed upon me to find work, like to get out there quickly. And I remember like this one time I really badly wanted to quit my job, and he's like, well, you can quit, but not until you have another job lined up.
Interesting challenge.
Yeah. And so what I ended up doing is I stayed with the job I had, because I was like, didn't know how to get a new job, or wasn't ready to look for one. But it's just stuff like that. It's like kind of like sticking with it. So like that's something that I'm really grateful for, that I stands out. I mean, I'm really glad that my dad, despite him not working on dirt bikes with me, you know, dad taught me general stuff like, you know, how to use a drill and screwdriver. And
amazing.
I learned a lot myself throughout the years, through motocross and rental properties. But, you know, just being in the dirt, being in the bush, hunting, you know, I was like probably less than 10 years old, skinning a deer, like the hide off of a deer. Jeez. And getting the deer in the woods and stuff like that. So, you know, it's like, I remember like some friends during the pandemic, they're like, yo, we got to get some like guns and fishing rods if we're going to like figure it out. Like, we're going to have to like fend for ourselves, and they're like, don't know how to use them. Not really hot, you know what I'm saying? And I'm it's kind of cool that I'm like, well, I could go in a boat,
let's
know
go
how to troll.
Yeah,
I could go in a bush and know how to like kill a deer, and
I could bait the hook for you guys. I'll show you. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll start with a worm.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I found what's what's really cool, especially too, about the generation, that generation of fathers and like men, is they do have that lace up by the bootstraps, 4 a.m. hard knocks kind of attitude. But no matter what, I always found that it was an example, right? And I never really thought about this as much until like the last couple, like the last 2-3 years even, but kids won't follow what you kind of do. They'll follow what, like how, or they'll follow what you do, not what you say, right? It's like, I could tell, oh, go work hard. But if you see me drinking on the couch every night, it's kind of, and not
yeah,
really
that's
doing
the way
much.
It's always been, and still yeah. I think will be, and so. Should be like leading by actions, not by your words.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's, especially with men, I like that you mentioned earlier that you get to see what we don't want to do and what we should be doing. Like I have friends where their dad was an alcoholic or is even, and then you can clearly see one of them was like, I'm gonna do that because my dad did that. And then I could see the others going, I'm doing this, which is being completely sober forever, because I don't want to do what he did. It's to yeah. Like the examples and lessons they're very crazy, because it's, they don't say a thing to you, but they're so impactful over time. And one question I was kind of looking forward to, I've been cultivating a bit, trying to understand the best way of, figure out the best way of asking you. But if you were to design almost a, let's call it a curriculum for young men, let's go with like in that time period of like 18 to like 24, 25, like late teens, early 20s, like young adult men, how would you kind of base that curriculum as like a list of things? We can go as simple as a list of things that every man should do for experiences, because I think there's a lot of different things. Like I think the hunting is very important. The construction aspect is very important, but also just to understand what that type of work is and then use that to build. And I'm very curious what your take on this is. If you could make a curriculum.
I mean, I've never been asked that or never thought about it specifically like that before. I mean, to our point, I mean, with hands down, using tools would be an example. It's mm-hmm. like, dude, when I was like on the sledge hockey team, there's guys that didn't know how to turn a wrench to work on their hockey sled. It's like, there's two fucking wrenches. It's a 7/16 fucking socket or wrench and just turn.
There's two, like, options. Yeah.
Guys didn't know how to balance the blades of their sled. If you move the blades forward, you're going to lean, you're going to turn sharper, but your front end's going to come up higher. And if you move the blades backwards, you're essentially lengthening the wheelbase. So you'll have more stability, but it's going to fucking turn slower.
Right.
But it's like, guys didn't know how to fucking set up their blades. And I'm like, you can hear it in my voice. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
So I digress. It's like, that one blew my mind. I'm like, you don't know how to fucking use wrenches? Like how to fix your sled? Like, come on, dude.
Yes.
Amazing. So tools and building stuff would be a place to start. Like I love, like, my dad didn't teach me drywall. I just got a rental property and just like figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
But like, and I don't do electrical or plumbing. That's kind of like most people that are kind of like handyman. It's like, you don't touch the wires or the water.
Yeah. Wires. Yeah. Specifically for me at least, but
anyway, so like tools are one, number two. Yeah. Hunting, fishing. I mean, I don't go and do that anymore. I don't particularly want to right now, but like gathering food is a hunting and gathering old male trait, let's say.
Right.
Just being physically active and strong. Like women want strong men. Men need to be strong physically. Like, I'll give you an example. My girlfriend now, she's got 2 kids. They're 4 and 6 years old. They're super cute. And I don't know their weight. They're probably like, 50 and 75 pounds or something like that.
Sure.
But carrying them, it's like, they love it. And I love carrying them when we're walking. Well, I right now am totally capable of carrying one. I would love to physically be able to carry both of them at the same time safely.
Safely.
So,
yeah.
That now has inspired me to, further become stronger, but it's like, there is a guy that made an Instagram video about functional training. He's like showing him carrying like a sandbag in the garage, like on his shoulder while he's got a dumbbell over this way. And he's like walking awkwardly with like one ankle weight on or something like
that.
And it's like, that seems like, what the hell are you doing? It's like, well, when you're carrying your child by yourself in one arm because they're upset and you have a bag of groceries in this arm and you got to step over a manhole in a parking lot or something stupid, like that's the real thing.
100%. Yeah.
And to not be able to carry your kid when they're upset or carry the groceries or like whatever, it's like, those are three things. Those are three things: tools, food, and strength.
Right. And I think to your point with the strength, I was listening to something a couple of like weeks ago, and they're talking specifically that they would get kids even to do, and like kids, teenagers to develop this, is like every man should do some form of like almost like combat style. Like they should do a fight. They should have a fight at some point in their life. And it can be like a wrestling match, high level wrestling, high level jiu-jitsu match, kickboxing match, Muay Thai fight, whatever it is, right? They could do it in where it's like the contained. I don't expect everybody to go out and start picking fights in like the street, but something in like a contained environment like that. I think young men, just to build the confidence and understand where you stand, right? And it's like there's so much more that you're able to push yourself, like your limit so much further than you think, and you won't know that limit at all until you're tested to that limit.
Yeah.
And I think that specifically you're able to find out with those experiences, like with the combat style stuff. So
yeah,
that's my like a big addition that I wanted to mention. But I think that's I wanted to say something kind of off topic but on topic, because I really want to talk about this, because I'm curious when you mentioned it. But I think of all the things I've seen you do or read about you doing, I think the most resilient thing I've seen you do is I saw a video from, I'm sure it was a while ago, of you putting up Roxol insulation in your walls shirtless. And I think I was like,
during the pandemic.
Yeah, that was a while ago, right? And I'm like, this is the craziest thing, because I've done it in ceilings, like underside of joists, right? Underside of the subfloors. And I'm like, I go home the next day, I'm like, anywhere my like skin touches my clothing, I'm like, it's driving me nuts.
Well, I had gloves on. It's like, I just couldn't, don't scratch yourself. And that stuff's terrible. But like, I just did it shirtless on the vertical wall.
Yeah.
Well, all walls hopefully all are walls. Vertical.
Yes. Awesome.
Yeah, that was a hell of a fun project. I mean, that's an example. It's like,
yeah,
I moved up from Toronto to Barrie and had a great landlord, and the garage was uninsulated. The gyms were shut down because of the pandemic. And I was like, hey, would you be cool? I'll do the labor for free, but would you pay for the material and I'll insulate your garage? And then when I move out, you still have an insulated garage.
Yeah.
And it was like a $500 or $600 project for him. And it was so much fun for me to do. It was good for my mental health too, because to this day, I'm building my life online. Essentially, it was speaking's in person, but last summer I built a barrel sauna. I built the pad for the hot tub.
Nice.
I just love using tools, but it's a meditation. Like using tools to just like get zoned in on the measurements, the cuts and assembling. Mm-hmm. And it's a physical, tangible product at the end of the day, not a PDF document or an email you sent out. And there's a ton of days where I'm like sad that I'm not in trades physically anymore. But one day, you know, I thought about if I had another rental property that I could chip away at it, that I didn't have to turn it around for a timeline of renting it. It's like, it'd be fun to just pick away at. But I'm not at that place in my life at the moment anyways, but that would be a fun like retirement project one day.
Yeah.
Like labor and build shit.
It's fun to when you have that knowledge and skill set, and then for you to just pick it back up again. It's like riding the bike, and you're like, you're obviously not like, oh, I'll do it 12 hours a day just doing drywall as like a profession. But being able to kind of refer back to that is cool. Cause like you said earlier with the curriculum question, is you had that skill set growing up, you learned it and you were able to remember it and go, oh, okay. You know, and over the years things come up and it's just one of those things that builds confidence. And then you're like, oh, I now have buildings that I can use. How many, you have rental properties now?
Just the house I'm living in right now. At one point I had three, but I sold them, and then just kicking around with this place now.
Oh, nice. Okay. I was curious. So when, kind of backing up a bit, when did you first decide, like, for coaching and speaking? Like, how did you manage to come up with that idea and then package it? Like, what was that process like for you?
Yeah, speaking was a fluke. I mean, dad passed away, and I got asked to share my story at a fundraising event for Spinal Cord Injury Ontario. So I did like a 6-minute talk, and they said that was cool. Would you do it again? And I did that, and they said that was cool. Would you do it again? And it just became a thing. Like I just approached it that I was helping people by sharing my story. I had beyond zero. I didn't even know that public speaking was a thing. I didn't know you could get paid for talking. Like,
yeah.
It was out of my realm of even, it was not even in my stratosphere of any kind. And so that just grew. And like, it also showed me that, living with my disability, and like, I've part-time had a couple other jobs along the way after my recovery, it really showed me that I don't want to work for somebody else because I want the freedom and flexibility to like nap if I have to, or like exercise when I want to, or when my body calls for it. Like, I have a lot of invisible challenges every day that people don't see, like muscle spasms, pins and needles, chronic pain and fatigue. And there's some days that it feels debilitating, is the honest answer. But anyways, that's what put me on stage speaking. And then coaching, just after a number of years, like doing keynotes, it honestly became kind of sad to me in some ways. It's like, I know that I help people by sharing my story on stage, and I still do enjoy doing that, but it's like, I get up there and motivate somebody for an hour, and then I don't see them again. And it's like that inspiration, motivation, like inspiration can last a lifetime.
Yeah.
Motivation might fade away before they get out the door.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, and I also felt truthfully kind of jealous that I'm like, I want to help these people. I want to help people not just aspire to have a transformation. I want to help them experience the transformation.
Interesting. Yeah.
So as I've seen other people coaching or getting people results and stuff like that, I was like, I want to do that. Because I'd be for years having conversations with people in a parking lot, in a hockey locker room, like at the end of a party, or like on a sidewalk, or you bump into somebody, a stranger on the bus, and they like, oh my God, that helps so much just from that chat.
Amazing.
And what I realized is that I've essentially, in a way, informally been coaching people for years. I just never been doing it to get paid for it.
Oh, interesting.
Cause I love the conversations. I love helping people mentally shift their mindset to embrace change.
Yeah.
So long story short, the pandemic kind of provided an opportunity to create my own program, which I mostly delivered through corporate workshops. And then I finally, this past December, took the full leap to just launch it publicly. It took 3 launches. The first 2 were not successful. But now I have a group coaching group called the Hero Tribe to help others adopt my mindset, the hero mindset, just uncover limiting beliefs, get out of your own way, stop self-sabotage patterns, you know, clearly identify what your goals are and consistently go after them with resilience and grit. So I love coaching people to develop their mindset, to go after what they want in their life so that they don't give up on things that matter. Like my dad, or like people on a job site, or people that are just taking the easy road in life. It's like you were talking about your friends. It's like, you know, took this path their whole life, and now they're all of a sudden searching for meaning and purpose. It's like, I went the opposite way. It's like, I took meaning and purpose early. Often I feel like I haven't necessarily found the financial freedom that I've been looking for, but I also know that I have had, like, I look at the day, like January 2nd of 2002, sorry, 6. As mentioned, you were walking off a job. I don't feel like I've worked a day in my life since.
Amazing. Yeah.
Like 20 wow. years, I don't feel like I've been working. I've had hard days that have required hard work, but I also have similar conversations, like you say, with folks that are approaching I'm 41. So like, you know, it kind of starts to hit you around mid-30s, early mid-30s is when it did for me and these other folks that I'm chatting with. And it's like, they're making the dollars, they got the promotion, they got the title, but it's like they're fucking empty inside. And it's like, everyone's got to figure out their own stuff, but it's like, most often you got to ask yourself, what have you been chasing? Has it been the right thing?
Right. Interesting. So you just mentioned 41. a lot has happened in the last 20 years, right? And I want to know, is what in the last 20 years, or even in, let's go with the last like five, because the last like three, four have been crazy, right? With the pandemic and stuff and everything and before that. So I'm curious, in the last five or so years, do you have like a recent experience in that timeline that is kind of aha, like an aha moment or something that's really shaped or changed your perspective today?
The Hoffman process that I experienced a year and a half ago now has mm-hmm. been the most transformative thing in my entire life. If someone's listening that is not watching on video, like my entire left arm is a tattoo sleeve. And that just, yeah, it's just barely 12 months ago that I got the tattoo sleeve. Long story short, just for context and time, the Hoffman process is a week long retreat about identifying and uncovering what's this guy Bob Hoffman coined as negative love syndrome.
Mm.
So what most of us experience in our childhood is a lack of love from one of or both of our parents, and that can come in the most innocent way. It may not even be that our parents are intentionally ignoring us or rude, but maybe you have one parent that is working all the time, 6 days a week, or traveling. And so whenever they're not at home, you feel like they don't love you because they keep leaving you.
Mm.
And so what we do is we pick up what they call, Hoffman process identifies as patterns, in order to get love. So an example in that scenario might be that whenever that parent is home, you act out, whether that is like being rude and like obnoxious to get attention, to get love, like to get the attention is feeling loved.
Whoa. Or
it might even be that you're like the clown of the house, or like the mm-hmm. jokester. You make everybody smile. Like, look at me, dance around. But it's like you get attention,
right?
So you feel loved because you're lacking love in some other way.
Wow.
So
that's wild.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating.
That's really cool.
And I'll give you an example. Like, I can now look back in hindsight. I was seeking my attention, my love, through achievement, through sex, through accomplishment, through doing risky things, taking big jumps, traveling, deciding in 48 hours that I'm going to uproot my life and travel from Ontario to BC and live out there for 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a high, like I mentally and emotionally got a high from the attention that people gave me when I would do these things.
Whoa, it was filling that void. That was, whoa, that's crazy.
So today now, like I'm aware of it, but I lived 20 years of my life or more not knowing that. And like I said, there's so many examples. It's like, if you think to like the class clown or the kid that wants to fight in school all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or I mentioned to you as well, like, you know, if you're in sales, it's like, you know, by being a great salesperson, you're getting a lot of attention from the people in your relationships.
Yeah.
Like, how does that fill you up? And it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. Like, it can be a good or a bad thing. Like, I don't regret that I pursued achievement,
mm-hmm.
but I'm now able to see in hindsight what the real reason was behind that.
Yeah.
And where I had a lot of, I don't know if I use the word errors, or like I had a lot of like patterns show up. Like, I'll give you the truth of the example is like in dating. Like I spent 20 mm-hmm. years in short-term relationships because whenever they would come to a place of this is getting serious, I would break up. I'd self-sabotage. Or if there was conflict, I would always avoid the conflict because I learned through my parents and what I saw that when they got into a disagreement, it was my dad's way or the highway, and my mom would shut down, be quiet, and leave the room.
Mm.
So instead of me picking up the pattern of, well, there's still sometimes I think I'm right, but I got two tattoos on the inside of my wrist, which says truth and speak up. And it's because I used to avoid conflict, or when I did speak, I would not say what I meant.
Which might be worse.
Yeah. It's like you're not serving the other person or you by pretending, by telling the truth of what's
right.
The challenge in that conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I went down a rabbit hole anyways, but the biggest transformation in my entire life was at the Hoffman process. And there was a series of steps that led up to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think like through developing your self-awareness, you start to mm-hmm. uncover who you are and why you are the way that you are. And if I had gone straight to the Hoffman process with no other prior experience of self-awareness or development, not that it's not going to benefit you or be a great experience. But
right.
For me personally, it was great that I had done a lot of other work prior to going there. And then when I was there, I was like, oh, I'm so all in on this to uproot this shit that's been in my life for 2 decades that I'm like, it was just the best, most magical experience ever.
Oh, it's amazing, Kevin. It sounds like it's more powerful, more effective that way. And there's something I want to go back and kind of highlight, if you don't mind, about the conflict resolution and with honesty on like the front of, oh, there's a disagreement. So the biggest thing I found and learned in the last like year or so, just with different like friend groups and like other men I've been talking to about this, is if you don't speak up when there's an issue that's like happening or there's a conflict in, and it's more often than not, it's like relationships, like our own relationships with women. But the thing is, if you don't do it, a lot of people are worried, right? Like you're all, oh my goodness, if I speak up, they might think X or they might think Y, right? Mm-hmm. But I found too, especially like discussing this with men and really understanding this, is it comes from a place of trust. So I have to have so much trust in our relationship that I'm willing to put to risk all of that to tell you about this issue that's bugging me, and trusting you that we can connect, that we're connected and we can get through this together. Because if you don't, then that's, and worse, like you said too, if you lie and you have that other option, you take that other route where it's almost comes, it almost feels like manipulative. Right. It's like, oh, I know they're going to want to hear this. Is. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's unconscious or innocent because you think you're doing the right thing. But that is, it's like you not telling the truth is that you are manipulating your answer to try and get something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's a depth of insecurity there that's, unless the conflict's being resolved with, and there are like uncomfortable conversations I've had with my own girlfriend in the last like year or so that have needed that. Or like, I really don't want to, or it's like, why am I upset with this person? Cause like I'm assuming experience countless times, even more than me even, is if you don't tell them, it festers, right? If you don't do something about it, or you don't communicate or let it out, then you're like, why am I mad at this person who just asked me how my day was?
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
It's a weird thing. You have to have so much trust in the insecurity in your own relationship that you're willing to risk it all just to like get to the bottom of something. It's crazy. Yeah.
So on both sides, whether it's you or your partner, are you familiar with a guy named Peter Crone?
Yes, vaguely.
He's amazing on Instagram. His nickname's the Mind Architect. He has very original thought perspectives. And one of the things that Peter Crone said that I'll never forget, it's so true, and just like what you're describing, he says, life will reveal to you the people and circumstances to show you where you're not free.
Whoa. Can you say that again? Say that again for everybody.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Life will reveal to you the people and circumstances to show you where you're not free.
Powerful.
Just like you said, if you're being triggered because your girlfriend said something or whatever, it's like, that's on you. It's like the people, the circumstance is revealing where you're not mentally or emotionally free from a thought, a behavior, a pattern that is still controlling your life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's crazy to understand that when you have that conflict and you allow it to kind of fester and then it builds up and then you see it and I'm like, how are they being so positive? But the only real emotion that if we think about that we need to be able to control, especially as men, is anger, right? Because like that's the only one really, because if we're sad, that turns into anger, right? It's like we're sad or angry because we didn't get this. Like they all kind of knock, they're all living on the same street as anger, where it's like, oh, happiness and like feeling joyful and we're like, you know, we're feeling fulfilled. Those are all character traits and emotions people want to be around. If you're, it's like, oh, Kev's too happy all the time. It's like people want to be around that no matter what, like the situation or whatever your past experiences or story is, people want to be around happy people, right? But the anger and when that festers and then little things like, oh, now I'm sad. And then it turns into something. It's like, oh, I'm sad about this, but I'm angry about that. And then we lash out and we display it, especially as men in terms of anger. Whereas I think women have sadness and we have anger. Like they cry, we rage more often than not as like a outlet or an overarching like expression of it. And I think that's how we lash out. And I've kind of just gotten to realize that the last couple months, I'm like, oh, anytime there's a conflict, I get mad, she gets sad. Let's figure out why. All right. How do we prevent this? Conflict resolution, honesty,
yeah,
trust in the relationship. Yeah. It's a lot, but it's cool.
Sweet, man.
That's cool. So I have one kind of final question, if you're up for it, just kind of to wrap everything up that we've talked about. We went here, we went there, but I'd like to know, Kevin, for somebody in, let's say in their 20s, leaving high school, they're in kind of that area where they don't really have an idea of purpose yet. They have some skills they've built up, whatnot. We could focus on men specifically too in that time frame. What is something that as a piece of advice you would offer to them so that they can get the most out of their life? And let's go with feeling fulfilled if you can.
Goodness. A piece of advice for life. I don't know. What's coming to my mind right now is just like, trust your gut to follow your heart and where you want to go. You only got one. My experience and take is that you only got one life, and you don't want to be living somebody else's life. So be willing to fail along the way and go after what you think is right for you.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Awesome.
Mind if I share, Glenn, just an invitation to anyone if they're listening and they're interested in possibly working together?
I was going to roll out the red carpet for you just now too. I just checked the time. So I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Kevin, floor is yours.
Cool. Yeah. Real short and simple. Thanks, Glenn. Like you included too. if anyone listening is interested in looking for some support, like a community and guidance to like work through your mindset, limiting beliefs and navigating life through a career or life transition, I invite you to please reach out at Kevin Rempel on Instagram. Just DM me the word mindset and love to have a chat about you joining the Hero Tribe. We meet every Saturday and have accountability calls throughout the month as well. But we get together, chat about what everything I've learned through visual models to put it in perspective, and then help people work through their own challenges. And it's definitely my passion in addition to speaking. So I'd love for anyone that's interested, just reach out, Kevin Rempel on Instagram, and just DM mindset.
I love it. Oh, it sounds so good.
Speaking from the heart, dude. Yeah. I mean, you doing what you're doing, I'm so sure you already got it too, but it's like,
thank you.
Yeah, when you don't try to fake it, or when you're speaking about what you know, it comes off clean, I think.
Yeah, oh, I think so too. So Kevin, just to conclude, I'm grateful I was looking forward to this for a while, so I'm really grateful you're able to give time to me today and us have this discussion. I'd like to do this again at some point in the future, and not near future down the road. I know there's a lot of things we're kind of going through and working towards, so it's cool to just really dive into like masculine essence and stuff like that and understanding that. And I could talk about that for hours and conflict resolution and stuff. So I really appreciate you setting aside an hour for us today and having this discussion with me, man. I'm grateful for your time. So thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm a fan of you and what you're doing, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks, man.